Hey, Bree.
Hey.
So what's cracking? Are we starting a podcast or what?
We're starting a podcast.
But it's more than a podcast.
Hello, everybody. It's Asana and welcome back to Yabba Who Cares. Today, we are joined by Zach Shucklin. He is a porn writer, producer, and host. He's also a writer and host for Vice and Paper Magazine, and he is a porn writer for Brazzers, the number one paid porn site in America. Though he identifies as gay, he writes primarily straight and lesbian porn. Let's get into it.
So, just to get us to kick off, what got you started into porn writing?
Okay, so basically, I was honestly just really curious. I was during the pandemic. I guess we're still kind of in the pandemic, but it was during like deep pandemic, and there wasn't a lot of stuff to do career-wise. You know, everyone was working remotely. If you were fortunate enough to still have a job, I was just kind of bouncing around freelance projects, and I wanted to spice it up a little. And I've always found porn very fascinating, and I didn't know if there was actually like a scripting process to writing these, you know, just scenes that you see ripped on Pornhub. So I reached out to someone from MindGeek on LinkedIn, and I was like, hey, is this actually a thing? Do you actually script out scenes? And he was like, yeah. And I mentioned that I would be interested, and so I sent him some Vice articles that I had written, and if his boss ever got the chance to read them and she thought, I don't know, I had the chops to write porn, I would be very interested in speaking with her. And then a few months down the line, she did, and I had to basically audition with some spec scripts and to see if I could write porn and write the Brazzers or Brazzers voice. And then I just started doing that on the side.
Okay. Wow. Wait. So as a gay man, then what did you find so fascinating and appealing about porn?
Okay. So, I think this is like a multi-pronged answer. As a gay man, I consume a lot of porn.
Okay.
Definitely like an integral part of my day. Sometimes it's for convenience sake. I think there's been studies that guys are like hyper-visual. And, you know, sometimes I have things to do. And, you know, porn just like helps me finish the job a lot quicker. And then I'm out the door. And
yeah, it does.
But I also think that there's been a pivot to kind of pro amateur porn, things that feel a lot more authentic and real and personal, because heavily produced porn maybe doesn't appeal to everyone because it's so wacky and zany. But that's precisely why I wanted to write it, because when you really like boil porn down, like all of these scenarios are so absurd, and the idea that people would be getting off to my own absurd scenarios like was just so tempting. I couldn't not try.
What are some of the scenarios that people can check out that you've written?
So I've turned in a bunch of scripts. I actually owe them a script that I'm so embarrassingly late on, and all I had to do was flip the gender. But I was, I don't know, creatively against that. And so I haven't done that yet. And I still need to turn in that script so I can write more. But I think I have three scenes out right now, to my knowledge. They never really tell me. So there's one called Say Yes to the Breast, and that is a girl-girl scene that takes place in a bridal gown shop. There is Sorry Ladies, This Hunk is Cucked, and that is a bachelor party scene that takes place in Vegas. And then there's also Caramel Cacchiato, and that is a coffee shop scene.
Okay. So what's your primary inspiration when you're writing?
I just try to think of, there's actually no inspiration. Okay. I really just try to come up with a concept that maybe I personally haven't seen before. Okay. Then go from there. But like, there's a few scenes that I've written that I don't necessarily think they've loved. There was one called The Morgue, The Merrier, which was a threesome that took place in a coroner's office where a man pretended to be a cadaver. Mm-hmm. And like two morticians were kid examining his body, and he got an erection, and they obviously had to investigate it with their mouths. And then there was one called Irresistible Siren Pussy, which was definitely the most surreal that I've ever kind of written.
And why was that?
Why was it so surreal? Mm-hmm. I just liked the idea of having a fantasy element. I think we all wish that we could escape sometimes, mm-hmm. even into like a really bizarre smut scene. And so it was kind of my version of Lord of the Rings.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that. So to take it like a step back into kind of your job and then the porn industry, what are some of the misconceptions that people have about the porn industry?
You know, I definitely am in a position where I'm slightly removed probably from misconceptions and like the actual sex work component of it just yeah. because I write scenes and primarily talk through email. So personally for me, I think probably it would just, the most vitriol I would receive would be like a stern voicemail from my grandma who didn't approve of this line of work. But I do know that sex workers working in the porn industry and cam industries sometimes have a problem with healthcare and banking. I know that banks, if they find out that your money does come from sex work, can like freeze your accounts or wow. they won't let you open an account. And it just is a, I guess, obstacle to try to do something that maybe feels a little more legitimate. And not that, you know, sex work on the side isn't legitimate, but I think that by normalizing sex work, you're able to create kind of safety protocols that maybe you wouldn't be able to have if you were kind of operating under the guise or in the shadows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good, really good point. I mean, I guess so to follow on to that, then do you feel like there is like a huge stigma attached? Well, there is a stigma attached to the porn industry mm-hmm. and maybe being like a sex worker. But do you feel like that stigma is attached to you then as a porn writer?
You know, probably if I was encountering some very conservative people, they yeah. might not be down with it. Personally, I think it's super funny. And it's what I didn't realize when I started writing porn is that I'm following kind of like the same storytelling foundation as I would approach another script. Mm. You know, you still have to have a lead. The narrative still has to work. Obviously, the end goal will be sex, but you're still taking these storytelling elements to actually get there. It looks like a normal script, except you'll just leave a portion of it blank where it just says they fuck. Mm. I guess I'm forgetting what the question was.
No, you definitely answered it. Yeah. But now I'm even curious. So who writes, what do you call, like, whenever all the sex happens, is it, like, choreographed? Like, who writes that part? Like, how do you know, like, the girl's going to now give him a blowjob mm-hmm. or?
So I'll kind of, basically the way it works is I'll come up with a scene. And because the porn stars here are like the true pros, they know what angles work, or they know kind of what positions naturally fall into other positions. And so normally I'll like leave that entire kind of sexual choreography, I guess we could call it, up to them, unless there's an actual component that I know I want to see visually or kind of works with the story. So for this one scene, the bitch trainer, which I still need to turn in, this girl has like a very aggressive trainer. He's going to whip her into shape, and she has to do squats, and to make sure that she's going low enough, he is sitting under her ass, and she has to like touch his face, and that'll signal that, you know, she did the squat correctly, and he starts like eating her out from that. Okay. So like I wrote that in the script because that is how we kind of get to the actual intimacy of the scene. But like when they're, you know, going from like doggy to missionary or whatnot, that's kind of up to them. And
So I, you also said, you alluded to the fact that they wanted you to switch gender. So
yeah.
Is that the final scene? Is the woman is the trainer and the man is the trainee?
It will be. No, it's going to, it's actually going to be a lesbian scene. But okay. Why I had so much agony over switching was because she's like, he starts jacking off and like that's where she sees the penis for the first time, like when she's squatting, she's like looking forward and then she sees that his dick is out. And I just didn't think that there was like as easy of a transition without that like really phallic thing just waving in the air like a, I don't know, those like air dummies at
at the gas station.
Yeah, gas station or a dealership. So I was racking my brain for like a transition into the sex. Okay. And so I'm still thinking about it and it's embarrassing how long it's taken me to think about it.
I think that it is very brave of you as a gay man to write stories from other perspectives. And I think that even transitioning over to the film industry, a lot of men, and of course it's a male-dominated industry as well, have trouble writing characters from different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, how do you give kind of accuracy to these situations that you might not find yourself in?
It actually kind of was an insecurity when I was sending in these scripts that they would read them and be like, this guy has no clue how straight sex works. Mm. So especially with Brazzers or Brazers, there is kind of like a... These characters all exist in a world that kind of reminds me of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where everyone is a bad person and they're all so eager to get each other. So if someone's boyfriend or if someone leaves the room and their boyfriend is still there, that guy is fair game. And that girl's only mission in life is to fuck over her best friend and suck that guy's dick and make sure her friend sees, and then she'll laugh in her face. They're all like incredibly despicable people. So once you have that kind of mentality going in, it you can write, you know, zany, outrageous, and funny scenes because sex is always on the table in this world and everyone is so eager to sabotage each other.
It's like the Marvel's universe or like the DC Comics universe as well.
Yeah,
it feels like there should be some more thought on potentially creating more of a feature length film where the recurring characters can interact with one another.
I would love that. I would love to I don't know, go down that journey. There's also this kind of concept of porn logic. Okay. So porn logic is essentially, you know, how can I make this person have sex with me even though it's so maybe inappropriate right now? So, for instance, in my scene, sorry, ladies, this hunk is cucked. This guy is going on a bachelor party in Vegas. His fiancée-to-be knows what happens in Vegas and doesn't want him to hook up with any of the strippers. To make sure that he doesn't, she goes in disguise as a stripper and fucks all of his friends in front of him to make sure that he doesn't cheat on her. So that's porn logic. Yeah, it doesn't make sense, and you're kind of inverting this trust trope.
Okay.
While still imbuing it with just so much raunchy sex.
Okay. Oh my. So, okay. So it really sounds like then that you clearly have a vision whenever you are writing these scenes, and mm-hmm. you're not on set whenever they're being filmed, are you?
No, with COVID. Or maybe it was a freelance thing. I really don't know. I want to go on set so bad. My dream is to direct a scene with everyone who was in my intro to storytelling class film school. So like every member of the crew would have been a freshman with me at Chapman. Oh, wow. That is a dream of mine.
Oh my God. That would be amazing. So then do you care then if your scene is either loosely or strictly adhered to whenever it's being filmed?
Yeah, I'm a script purist. The scene is good as it is. I don't want any deviation from my lines or concepts that I created. And okay. Yeah.
Okay, I love that.
I'm sure some directors in Hollywood are cool with riffing and improv. You know, maybe if this was an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, but it's not. I think of myself as a porn like Noah Baumbach or I don't know, Ari Aster, I've heard is like very hyper technical and like sticks to the script for all of his movies. And I feel the same way about my browser's porn. The lines are great.
As you should.
The lines are great.
So how do you even assert dominance in that situation? Or
I can't. I just pray and hope for the best. And then someday I'll eventually see it.
I mean, I think the whole pipeline of the porn industry is so fascinating. And have you done any research on and about kind of the owners of Brazzers, if they're ethically aligned to what you stand for? And we also know, and there are several studies that show that a large percentage of porn depicts violence against women and a lot of misogyny. So I'm curious, as a porn writer, do you feel like you play a role in perpetuating violence against women?
Oh, I thought this was a podcast amongst friends. So I do know.
Listen, it's a safe space. We should have mentioned that before. It really is. And so here's what I think that we're trying to get at the core of is, I mean, this is what we hear, like, okay, so men obviously aren't taking like classes on sex or how to engage with sex or how to engage with women whenever they're having sexual intercourse or vice versa. But a lot of young straight men or just young men in general will go to porn as they're growing up and watch it. And like, this is like their first introduction to how you have sex with women.
Yeah.
If there's violence in there and they're like, oh, like my girlfriend likes to be, you know, like sex rough, quote unquote, if that's what you would call it. Where, like, how do you balance, I guess, how do you balance that with like your creativity whenever you're writing? How do you balance like making sure it's like, okay, or is it just, it's porn, it's an escape room, and like it doesn't actually, you want to put the trust in the viewer to understand that this should be, is not reality.
So I mean, I guess as far as like my scenes go, I've never written anything that like overtly depicted like male aggression or age play, for instance, which I know is like a very popular yet like problematic trope, right? You know, you have like, there's always like my stepdaughter or whatnot. I haven't done like that in any of the scripts that have been made. But yeah, I mean, I definitely think that porn is like a very unrealistic course in what sex is like. And again, I don't really watch straight porn, but I know that some of the same tropes also happen in the gay community. How do I feel like I perpetuate violence against women? No. Has Pornhub, which is owned by MindGeek, which also owns Brazzers, had ethical problems with, you know, like revenge porn or whatnot? Like, certainly. I don't think porn is inherently bad. I think I am of the belief that like porn is porn, and as, you know, fully fledged people, we should realize that like that is a fantasy, and sometimes fantasies can be like super weird. And there's obviously a line in not crossing in that territory in our real lives. But our minds can go to weird places and like intimate settings, and whether that's, you know, purely kink, if it was environmental, if there's like some trauma elements, which I know can also influence fetish. I think it's our best at, I think we need to do our best to just be like decent people in the bedroom. But as far as my own porn goes, I think that if you're a mortician and you, a guy's pretending to be a sexy dead man, and you two click, like, and go for it. And who am I to stop you?
No, 100%. I actually want to like also just dissect our question that we had that we had too is that I think our question also just goes back to a larger issue or problem around just like sex education and how what, you know, young mm-hmm. children's or young adults' introduction is to sex. Like maybe we need to have a more centered or focused, you know, course or introduction into like having safe sex or what safe equal what sex looks like. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, no one should be using porn as sex education. Although it would be really cool if porn companies did come up with their own sexual education courses. I think it's obviously more of a, you know, question to poise to the U.S. government and school system on sex education, and it's probably really sad that a lot of people's first forays into this kind of dialogue are watching porn at like very young ages that depict things that give them an unrealistic sense of what sex is like.
Mm-hmm. And it's sadly realistic. I need to pull up what the statistic is, but it's a very extremely young age in which boys are exposed to porn and porn sites, and that's how they learn about sex, which is really upsetting.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you draw the line in terms of your when you write, for example, if a someone from MindGeek was like, Zach, we really want you to write an age play type piece, would you say no? And do they give you any sort of parameters when you're writing?
So I don't know if I would like directly say no. It depends. Like there is, I guess I'm going to contradict myself. I realize I have written like an age play scene called Come Is the Warmest Color about a MILF hooking up with a recent high school graduate.
Wow.
And like you, there are like certain parameters that you have to have when you're writing a scene like that. So for example, it's really important in the dialogue to specify that that guy is 18. So you, and like the, you like, she'll have a line that says like, I know you're 18, but it's never too late to start painting, because she's giving him a painting lesson. So, and maybe this is just like gendered of me to think, but I would be more comfortable probably writing a scene with that dynamic rather than like a younger girl with an older man. I think it would be like harder for me to probably, I don't know, find something that I thought, you know, had some kind of like comedic value while also like not being creepy. But there's also like, I'm sure plenty of men and women who would find that dynamic like really hot. So I'm sure someone else would write a banger of a scene. What's funny is like, Brazzers has like a really kind of strict protocol with certain things that might be taboo. So for example, I had a scene called Slobbery Robbery, and I wrote that this guy is getting robbed by kind of like a woman in a cat suit. She's a jewel thief, and she's opening his safe, and he gets an erection, and she sees the money in the safe, but she sees his like big throbbing dick, and she can't choose between, you know, which is more important to her, and she ends up obviously choosing him for the scene. But I got a note back that, you know, we can't have anyone who is asleep because they can't consent. So he actually has to pretend to be asleep, and then he sees how big her ass is, and that's when he starts getting horny.
Yeah.
And then he just pretends to be asleep intermittently while she's robbing him. So I do think there are kind of like strict parameters, at least for Brazzers, but I can't really speak on other companies.
What's the most, I guess, like shocking thing that you've seen in the industry or since you've started writing porn?
I mean, I don't know if anything has like shocked me more since I'm very like far removed. Like, yeah, we'll have a Zoom meeting. I'll tell them some ideas, and they'll be like, oh, well, right now, you know, we're looking to shoot scenes in a house And so your ideas have to kind of fit within that ballpark because it's too hot to film outside right now or whatnot. And then I just write the scenes and I get notes and maybe I'll make an edit here and there. And then I turn them in and months later, because I think they definitely stockpile all these scenes and it takes time to edit them and color them. I'll see them and that's it. But I don't know if I've really like been exposed to any of the seediness or perceived seediness of the industry because I'm really just like writing them from my couch.
But you do watch them in the end.
I will watch them in the end, but okay. They did not give me a membership. So I have to find wacky ways to find them.
I don't like that.
Yeah.
I don't like that they don't give you a membership. But relatively, you're pretty happy with how they end up turning out.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really have any influence on casting. And so it's always funny to see like who they ended up going with versus like, you know, what imagined porn star in my head was doing the deed. But yeah, I mean, I'm pretty happy with them as long as they stick to the script because it is good how it is.
How often do you talk about porn in your day-to-day life?
Probably so much.
Really?
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Why do I talk about porn? I think porn should be like normalized because porn is here to stay. First of all, porn has been around forever in every kind of iteration of culture. Yeah, like porn has been around. And this kind of faux sense of outrage that it exists is pretty humorous to me, especially.
Is it faux though? Like people are genuinely outraged by it.
I do think it is a faux sense because I feel, and you always just hear a scandal about some right-wing lawmaker who was super conservative having just like the most salacious sex life behind closed doors. And I think if we were to normalize this concept of porn, and it's really more of a conversation on normalizing sex, and you don't even have to be like sex positive. You can just be like sex neutral. Sex is a thing that happens. It's very normal. We should have just more open dialogues around it. And I don't think we would have as many problems in our society.
Wow. Really hitting with the world peace jargon. And honestly, I totally agree with you because as we normalize it, then the people who work in the industry can be able to have more access to financial help or be able to operate within society without having to hide a section of their life.
I mean, I like where this discussion is going specifically because, and I think the root of this is like, porn is such a taboo topic. Like, I can admit that you don't find my friends and I at dinner talking about porn. I don't know if you would find like, you know, straight men or straight guys at dinner talking about porn, but you did just mention that you talk about it a lot. So why do you think that it is so taboo to talk about? And maybe if it's in heterosexual relationships, why is it such a taboo topic?
I think there's so much shame just surrounding sex. Like, the idea that you could be a sexual being with desires, you know, we've been conditioned, whether it's, you know, a Christian upbringing or just a religious upbringing or whatnot, that like sex is bad, sex is a sin, and you're a bad person if you like it, you're like a pervert. And so I think that's why there's so much shelving when it comes to these discussions. But I mean, I guess unless you're like a virgin, everyone likes sex. And I think it's super normal. Obviously, there's like a time and place. I would prefer not to speak about sex with my parents. Right. But like, maybe if more parents were talking to their kids about sex at a younger age, and, you know, correcting bogus misconceptions about it, then, you know, we would be in a healthier, like, just standpoint in, you know, relationships. Maybe there would be less misogyny if boys weren't just picking up tips from the internet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't know. It all, like, factors in. I'm obviously not the person who is probably the most appropriate to speak on, like, you know, violence against sex workers or the things and trials and tribulations that they face and, you know, what it's like to be a Black queer trans woman who, you know, is forced by society to undergo this because she can't find work elsewhere. But I do think that, like, the root of the problem, or one of the roots of the problem, is kind of like sex closed-mindedness. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, misogyny.
Mm-hmm. You do talk a little bit about fetishes. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, what are some of the misconceptions when it comes to fetishes that you've uncovered in your research at Vice?
Sure. So just once again, I'm not a sexual expert. I'm just a guy who's interested in, like, you know, topics in that world. But so what is, there's kind of a lack of understanding when it comes to, like, kink and fetish. And sometimes we use them interchangeably, but they're really not the same thing. So a kink is something that maybe we just, like, find, like, spicy and, you know, you want to kind of make your sex life more exciting. Maybe it's something that's a little taboo that you find erotic and you want to, like, incorporate that into the bedroom. A fetish is normally kind of a fixation that is, like, integral to your sexual experience. So if, like, you have a foot fetish, maybe you won't be able to come without some form of, like, foot play or, like, foot imagery, like, in your sex. So all I think it's all is maybe it's all kinks are fetishes, but not all fetishes are kinks, or vice versa. So, like,
square rectangle.
Yeah. But I guess maybe that's one thing that I've learned. Like, I just did a documentary on adult babies that's coming out, and it was really interesting to learn how this kind of, maybe you could perceive it as a sexual fetish, has also grown to be kind of like a lifestyle. And we spoke with one adult baby who believed that they had age dysphoria and that their physical body didn't actually, like, correlate with how they felt in their head, that they were, like, actually three, even though they were, you know, a 32-year-old with a PhD.
Wow.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
A PhD in what?
I'm just going to, for the sake of, you know, protecting his identity, like, not say, but he's a very smart guy. And yeah. So I think a lot of people who, I mean, would hear that would be, like, very jarred.
Adult babies. Any other fetishes that you've dug into that are really interesting? Hmm. Or ones that you didn't know existed? And when we do that, do you mind quickly checking to see if it's recording?
Fetishes that I didn't know existed. I mean, like, let me think. A fetish that I didn't know existed. I mean, I feel like there's probably, like, a fetish for everything. It's called, like, Rule 34. Like, if you can think about it, there's probably porn made for it. Mm. So, I mean, everyone has different, you know, backgrounds and, you know, grew up in, like, different situations, and, like, environmental factors can kind of, like, influence, like, a fetish. Maybe, you know, you're going through puberty, you're, like, a guy in middle school, and your crush, like, farts in front of you, and then, like, years down the line, you're, like, watching porn and you see a girl who, like, looks, you yeah. see a girl who looks like her in porn who's also farting, and, like, that could just kind of develop into a fart fetish, maybe. Mm-hmm. I do want to go on the record and say that I don't have a fart fetish. That was just the first thing that came to mind. Not that there's anything maybe wrong with a fart yeah. fetish. I just don't have one.
Okay. Okay. I think that's pretty clear. Thank you for yeah. clarifying that.
Thank you for giving me the space to,
of course,
talk about that.
We're all about being safe and creating an environment in which we can all share our feelings yeah. and emotions.
I do feel fortunate, though, that I, like, can get paid to, like, learn about this stuff and then tell a story about it. I think that's super fun.
You also did a documentary on furry culture, right?
So I did one in college, and then I was looking into going to an alt-right furry conference.
Wow.
It was actually supposed to be this weekend, today, and I just couldn't get access to it. I tried. Unfortunately, it's happening right now without me.
The Discord must be really hard to get into these days, right?
Well, I'm in the Telegram, but they just wouldn't allow me to come to the conference. But this one did receive a lot of controversy, obviously. Like, you hear alt-right furries, and so
yeah.
They, you know, probably have some very extreme political beliefs. I know that they wear, like, Nazi imagery. It's obviously probably a lot of people would be very confused when you have furries, which, you know, are overwhelmingly kind of catered to, like, a queer audience, that you would also have these kinds of sentiments in that community.
What's a furry, by the way?
Okay, so a furry is when you... A furry is anyone who is really into anthropomorphic animals, so animals with human qualities, but you can usually identify a furry by their fursuits or fursonas, where they kind of look like mascots and they're walking around. Mm-hmm. But not everyone kind of has a fursuit. They're very expensive and kind of hand-me-downs or kind of second life suits are not really in vogue because it's not your own character or identity.
Where does it become a fetish?
So, I mean, I don't know if, like, I'm sure there's, like, actually, there was one furry I spoke with who could only have sex with his partner in his fursuit. He was not attracted to his partner outside of the suit. So I guess in that regard, it's a fetish. But for other people, there might not be a sexual component. And they just love, like, being cute little animals in these sweaty suits.
Okay. So whenever you say alt-right furry conference.
Yeah.
Is, like, I literally don't even know what to envision. Like, okay. I don't know why my mind went to, like, furry orgy.
Oh, I mean,
but
there have been, like, furry orgies at conferences before.
Okay.
There was a really notorious one from this one conference, but I can't remember what it was. It might have been in Los Angeles in 2016. But so an alt-right furry conference, like, these are just, like, extreme right-wing, like, maybe some of them are neo-Nazi furries. Uh-huh. They basically have, like, a swastika parody patch, but it's a paw print. And I thought that would be really interesting to go to. I'm Jewish, and so I just thought it would be so...
potentially unsafe.
What are they going to do? Hug me?
I feel like there'd be a lot to unpack, you know, take off before. It's like, can you hold my earrings? But
you know what? Like, when it comes to, like, anti-Semitism, it's fascinating because most ardent anti-Semites, they don't hate, like, you as a Jewish person sitting across from them. They hate, like, the concept of Jewish people. Like, mm-hmm. The idea of, like, thousands of years of anti-Semitism that has culminated in this, like, evil group of people. So I personally, like, wouldn't be nervous about going to an alt-right furry conference. But they did get a lot of flack because originally they were trying to have the conference on the anniversary of the Tulsa Massacre. And once their venue found out that they were doing that, the venue canceled. So they had to move the conference. So, I mean, clearly, you know, these are people with some not very kosher sentiments. But I did think that this kind of weird mix of, like, queer subculture mixed mm-hmm. with, like, very unsavory political identity, racial beliefs was, like, something that would be, like, worth examining.
1,000%.
Why is it, and why do you think they converge together? And do you know anything about the history of why furries is a queer subculture?
So furries weren't always a queer subculture, but it's probably, like, false advertising to say that it, like, really is, like, a distinct queer subculture. You know, it's, they're not in the LGBTQIA. There were a few more letters added and I don't know my own history. But I think that a lot of, in recent years, a lot of queer people have been attracted to it, like younger queer people. I know that you can kind of, you know, you can put on another identity. You can try things out. You know, maybe you can be female furry, even if you're like, you know, an assigned male at birth person underneath that suit. So I think that it kind of attracts people who are questioning, maybe people who feel like outsiders. I know that there's a lot of neurodivergent people who also become furries. It's almost like that idea of donning a new identity kind of acts as a barrier for like, you know, so, or like a necessary barrier for like social interactions. So yeah, it doesn't feel as like overwhelming. I don't know. And then some people just really like animals and yeah.
Wow. I'm learning so much today.
Yeah. We're really digging deep about anti-Semitism, about porn and misogyny, about fetish and kink culture. This yeah. is really, truly fascinating. I'm curious, how has writing porn influenced your own sexuality?
I mean, I'm writing straight porn, and I think I kind of like that degree of separation from it, because I was worried originally when I kind of first, you know, started doing the side gig that I was going to have to watch so much porn just to get a sense of their tropes and, you know, how their scripts work. And I would just be constantly jazzed and juiced up. But it's straight porn, and I actually don't think that there's personally anything sexual of value for me watching it. So I just kind of try to imagine what is like the most bizarre circumstances for sex to happen amongst straight people and go from there. I can't really say it's like influenced my sex life other than I put it on my Hinge and people are always interested in talking about that. So maybe it's gotten me more matches.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And so where do you see the future of your porn career going? Is there there's an Oscars equivalent for porn, correct?
Yeah, there's the AVNs. There was the Pornhub Awards. No, there's a few different award shows. The idea of writing like a porn parody would just be such a dream of mine. Mm-hmm. Like to write the next Disney porn parody.
Mm-hmm. What would that would
be
like?
Such an honor.
What does that mean?
Well, I don't know what's a Disney movie that we're all waiting for. They did like a Frozen porn parody.
Okay. So like yeah. Ratatouille.
I would 100% do Ratatouille if Ratatouille has not been done yet.
Okay.
But do you ever feel like, or I don't, you probably have a lot of friends who are straight and and gay. Do you ever feel like porn kind of creates an unattainable standard for like men and women in their relationships, whether you're gay or straight?
Sure. They're like doing like crazy sex positions and they're always coming multiple times. That's like really not how sex works. The guys have huge dicks. That's really does not reflect the majority of most men.
Wow.
Including myself. And you know what? I'm brave enough to say it, and we are normalizing that right now, that most men do not have a 10-inch penis.
Thank you for saying that.
And, yeah, obviously, I think that the porn is porn, and, like, the sex in porn does not accurately reflect our own sex, and we shouldn't try to make it so either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like
that. We should just be content watching like unrealistic sex, and that's okay.
100%. But first we've got to educate our children on sex.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
First things first. Okay, so we're going to do some questions for you.
Okay.
Different than the questions we've asked prior. What is your hottest take when it comes to porn?
Hot take for porn, like, I don't always need to stick around for the money shot. Like, I got what I needed, and I don't think the money shot is all it's cracked up to be.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
It's because it's about the story.
I think it's about the story.
Okay.
Sometimes it's about the journey and not about
the destination.
Yeah, that cummy destination.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I think that normalization is good. Conversations like this are good. and that there should be some sort of attainable standard when it comes to sexual education that might be accessible to all, that's not dependent on who your teacher is in school.
Okay, well, that's not a hot take. That's a party platform. Are we running for office here?
Maybe.
Let's just quickly define what a hot take is. Like, hot take is something that you have a controversial opinion about. Okay. So if I had a controversial opinion about porn, it's that, like, I wish that girls also talked about porn, like, probably as much as guys did, because I know that it happens and it's a thing. And, like, I don't think that girls should get mad at their boyfriends for watching porn or feel any type of way about it, because maybe we all watch porn.
What if the porn looks like his ex? Like, he always watches porn of a woman that resembles his ex.
I don't think you can dig into fantasies like that. Okay. Like, you're with him or you're not with him. So
okay, he always watches porn where the girl does not only look like his ex, but she shares the same name.
I mean, listen, I think we talked about porn being very weird and porn being a fantasy. So at the end of the day, you have to be okay with it getting as weird as it possibly could get.
The porn is of his ex. He's watching old videos that him and his ex consensually recorded.
Oh, then we have to break up. Okay. I draw the line there.
Well, I think that maybe what the take is in a modern relationship is discuss that before. Like, before you get an exclusive relationship, it could be helpful to talk about each other's fetishes and kinks and what they like and what they don't like, because you might not be comfortable signing up for it. And then 2 years down the line, they're hiding their private Safari browser and maybe they can just surf publicly.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. We're mature now. Okay. FMK, Pornhub, Brazzers/browsers, mm-hmm, or OnlyFans.
Okay. Killing OnlyFans.
Why? Equity.
I don't have equity in it.
Okay, well then maybe make some. Oh, because then it makes your role obsolete.
Yeah, I don't have. But honestly, like, only there's actually been an interesting reckoning, kind of, where, like, you know, I guess, like, adult content creators are finding that they don't need, like, the traditional porn industry and they can make a lot of extra money. So for them, like, places like OnlyFans, before it, like, did its, like, weird kind of reversal, but, like, those kinds of platforms, like, they can make a lot of money and, like, not be at the whim of, like, toxic people in the porn industry. So good for them. But just as a concept, maybe brand power, I would say kill OnlyFans because I'm not on it. I would fuck Brazzers.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck Brazzers because Brazzers is too expensive for me personally. Mm-hmm. So I can only have one.
How
fuck.
Much is it?
It's like $40 a month. Mm-hmm. And I'd marry Pornhub.
Oh, wow. Because they're trusty.
It's always there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really, I've learned so much. Is there anything else you want to share with our audience?
Or anything you want to promote?
I don't know when this podcast is coming out, so promoting might be like, I'm not gonna promote anything because, like, what if it already came out, or what if it just doesn't come out for months? I don't know. Just have fun watching porn and don't get too many ideas.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to Yeah, But Who Cares? We care a lot about what you think, and actually, your reviews really help us out. So please like, subscribe, follow, or comment, and leave a review. Even if it's negative, we want to improve. And I'd like to give a big fat disclaimer. We are not professionals. We are not therapists. We are not financial professionals. So please seek out professional help. And this podcast was produced with our friends over at Yeah, But Who Cares, including our trusty producer, Serena. It was also produced in partnership with Under the Influence.
Shout out Under the Influence.
Shout out Under the Influence. Where can people find us?
If you want to find us, you can find us on our personal pages, Bree Springs and Sesana.
Yes.
But more importantly, you can find Yabba Who Cares on Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok, Twitter, YouTube. Did I miss anything?
That's actually the most accurate one.
Yeah, that's the most, those are the most important ones.
Yes. So thank you. Goodbye. See you next week.
Kisses.
Kisses.